Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Here we go into the 9 o'clock hour, 9:08. We're going to spend an hour talking about immigration, and I want to bring you, the audience, into this at 504-260-1870, the Oquinard Jeweler Talk and Text Line. If you have any questions about the whole immigration process, there are none that are too rudimentary, too simple, because I think we all think it's as simple as putting up a wall and then from then on checking everybody that comes in and kicking out those that don't belong. That sounds great, but in fact, it is a lot more complicated than that. And then it's easy also to say, well, let people in that are looking for a better opportunity, but yet there are people that have already applied, so why should they be able to cut the line? That's just the surface of the many different facets of this whole immigration problem. So with that, we welcome in our friend David Beer, Director of Immigration Studies at the Cato Institute. How you doing, David?
Great. Thanks for having me on.
Let me start with the Lake and Riley case that has garnered a lot of attention. I don't know if it's symptomatic, symblematic. I don't know what word you would use as it relates to the immigration problems in this country. What are your thoughts on that as far as what happened with this guy being detained by ICE? Then he was released. Then he went on to commit, allegedly, we'll see what the jury says, the judge says, rather, because it's not a jury trial, this horrific crime. Can you use this as a case study and go back to see what went wrong and from there extrapolate the problems we have in this country? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think you can learn things from every anecdote. Every story has something to tell us. I do think you need to not just say, okay, there's one person who commits a horrific crime, therefore we should shut down all immigration, which is kind of sometimes the implication of what people pull away from that. I don't think that's what most people say. I think most people want legal immigration where people are vetted before they get here and they aren't just released onto the streets and, you know, don't go through a process. So I think that's the first part of the lesson here is we don't want to have illegal immigration. We want a way for people to come and have our security agents vet them in advance. Now, there was no reason for Border Patrol. You know, it was Border Patrol who released them. There's no reason, nothing against any of the agents involved in that. There was no reason to know that this person had any kind of criminal intentions. But I do think there's blame to go around that New York City arrested him for shoplifting and then didn't allow Immigration and Customs Enforcement to come get him after he was arraigned for that offense. So really, New York City has adopted some very crazy laws that are really an outlier for the country. Most police departments do want to work with ICE to get rid of criminals. Instead, they apparently shipped him down to Georgia after he had already committed a serious crime in the United States. And then, of course, he goes on and commits this offense, this horrific murder. And, you know, at this point, look, you got to throw the book at him. You got to prosecute him to the fullest extent in the state of Georgia and make an example that, you know, you're not going to tolerate murderers in this country and not let them off easy. Because that's you know, that's part of what did get us in this problem. It's a criminal justice issue, but it's also an immigration issue.
Yeah, let me take a step back. Maybe we can use this in a way as a case study of what happens to people that enter the country illegally and once they are detained, because he was originally arrested by U.S. Customs and Border Patrol, right, in 2022?
Right.
When he was found
That's
in the
right.
country illegally, or was that during the course of committing a crime?
No, he crossed the border illegally and was arrested for that.
Okay,
yeah.
So as a case study, what happened from that point with him and others
so,
like him? And by like him, I don't mean that necessarily go on to murder anybody. I just mean that are detained. You know what I'm saying.
Yeah. So people who cross the border illegally are thrown into different buckets depending on where they're from. If you're from Mexico, there's buses right there. We're going to, you know, it's a few hundred feet to get you home and out of the United States. For people who are from countries that are, you know, next closest, the Northern Triangle of Central America, they'll commonly be detained pending removal, particularly if you're a single adult who enters the country without kids. You'll be detained and put on flights home. If you're from countries further away, you're less likely to be detained because there aren't enough planes, there aren't enough detention centers to hold everyone who crosses the border, especially at the time that the rate of illegal immigration was happening at that time. The issue with Venezuela is even more specific because we cut off all diplomatic ties with Venezuela in 2019. It makes it They are not accepting any kind of U.S. government planes flying into Venezuelan territory. So that makes it extremely difficult to deport people. Now, if certain violent criminals, they'll figure out a way indirectly to get them there using commercial airlines through a third country. But that's extremely difficult and costly to maneuver that. So there are very few. The bottom line is there's very few flights, deportation flights happening to Venezuela. So if you're not a criminal, odds are you are going to be released into the United States if you're from Venezuela, which this guy was. And from there, he went on to New York and then to Georgia.
But wait, just right there in what you said, David, is that if you are a criminal from Venezuela, then you get a flight home, but it's going to be extremely costly to the taxpayers. That's what I heard. That's right?
That's right, yeah. Yeah, but this guy didn't have any...
No, I understand
no
that.
Red flags, right?
I'm just talking about the policy in general, so that if you are a violent criminal, we're going to get rid of you, but it's going to cost a lot to do that, right?
Yeah, and you have to look at it, you know, costs. You know, we have a bucket of money that we can spend. Do we want to spend a bunch of more money per person to remove a few people to Venezuela, or do you want to spend a lot less money per person to remove a whole bunch of people to Central America? And that's the choice that Immigration and Customs Enforcement faces on a daily basis. They have to figure out how to get the most from the resources that Congress provided them. And so these are some of the choices that they end up making.
And you can't put somebody from Venezuela in a different Central American country because those countries are sovereign in and of themselves, and that's not legal, right, to do that?
Right, yeah. Generally speaking, you can't stick someone back in a country that they are not a national of. Now, some countries will accept people in those circumstances. For example, the Trump administration did negotiate some deals to allow people to be removed to Central American countries. But really, you know, all those flights are already full, so they didn't actually use it. They've used it very rarely, even under the Trump administration, because, you know, there are so many Central Americans that they want to send home that there's not really space for people from another country. So it's a quandary for the law enforcement at the border, for sure.
So I said I wanted to get the audience involved here, and I do, and this text pops up, and it may seem draconian, but I don't know if it is or not, because, and the text simply says, well, if they walked here, why do they get to fly home? Thoughts?
Well, it's not about getting them. It's not about, from their standpoint, it's not about, you know, a privilege of flying home. It's about assuring that they actually get home. Mm-hmm. And so under Title 42, which was in effect for the Trump, the end of the Trump administration and into the Biden administration, you had a policy whereby people were, third country nationals were being dropped off back in Mexico, just on the other side of the border. And this happened over and over and over again. So they would catch the person, they'd stick them back in Mexico. The person would be, okay, well, nothing to do in Mexico, try to cross the border again. And so what you ended up happening was about half all the people arrested under the Title 42 expulsion policy to Mexico were people who were reapprehended a second, third, fourth time. And of course, many of the people eventually evaded the Border Patrol and made it in under that policy. So it wasn't, you know, just relying on people to use their feet to walk home really isn't a reliable way to conduct enforcement at the border.
And I may have conflated Nicaragua, Venezuela, and called it a Central American country. It's not. It's a South American country. But and I don't know about this guy in particular with the Lake and Riley murder, but yeah. Generally speaking, Venezuela is a long way away from the southern border. How do people get from Venezuela all the way here? And I think, you know, a lot of people don't realize how long of a distance that is and how that happens.
Yeah, it's a great question. So initially in 2021, it was kind of the, I don't want to call them elites, but people who had some money were flying to Mexico City. Because they could get commercial flights to Mexico City and then walking from there or busing up to the border to cross. The Biden administration convinced the Mexican government to stop issuing visas to them so they couldn't fly anymore. And then those people who had money ultimately paid smugglers to get them up through Panama from Colombia into Panama and then up through Central America into Mexico. And, you know, they walk through the jungles of Panama and then they take buses from country to country. It takes a long time and it's a very expensive journey and some people don't make it. But, you know, look at the reward of coming to a free country with a lot of prosperity and opportunity here. If I was in their shoes, I'd probably do the same thing.
I get a text from somebody that says, why don't we just lock them up? That in
yeah,
the country
real expensive. Yeah, I mean, real expensive. And look, you're talking about locking up. Well, right now there's, you know, north of 12 million people in the country illegally. And, you know, that this obviously this is 4 or 5 times the entire prison population in the United States. Right now. So you'd have to be building a lot of prisons for all of those people. And that's very expensive to the taxpayer. You know, the average prisoner, I mean, you're basically paying them $35,000 a year, you know, to be locked up. And of course, then you're pulling a lot of productive people out of the private sector to guard those people. And so it's not a good deal for taxpayers to spend all that money to just lock them up. There's really a better approaches that are less costly to dealing with this problem.
Yeah, and I think also you can't be of the belief that, well, why should a prisoner be entitled to 3 hots and a cot, right? And then say lock up those that enter the country illegally, because if you do, that's basically what you're doing is getting them a place to live and something to eat, right? I mean, and then
I mean, it's welfare. I mean, maybe they would take that over whatever they're getting in, you know, the socialist countries they're fleeing.
All right, we'll continue to talk about this in broad strokes. And if y'all have any questions, 504-260-1870. Somebody says, how would we know if they're a criminal that they just crossed the border? And wouldn't they become a criminal by just crossing the border illegally? But if that's the case, again, so what do you do then? Where do you put them? Do you put them on a plane? If there's no diplomatic relations, like with Venezuela, with the guy that killed, allegedly, I'll say, because the judge hasn't ruled yet, with Lake and Riley, There are no simple solutions to this. It would seem like the first step, and I've used this example with you before, David, is, you know, Fred Flintstone with putting a cat out, and until you secure the borders, it seems like people are going to continue to come in. So that's kind of like an effort in futility. But we'll continue the conversation. David Beer, our guest, Director of Immigration Studies at the Cato Institute. We'll talk about what former President Trump, I don't want to say former president-elect, what President Trump intends to do and what that could look like, what is the better approach and so forth. Again, no dumb questions, 504-260-1870. Complicated situation, no easy solutions, and we already addressed lock them up because that would be four or five times the current prison population, which is extremely costly as it is, and somebody's going to have to pay for that. 922, Tommy Tucker, back in a flash, WWL. All right, 929, 9 o'clock hour. We're less busy with news and traffic and everything else, so we like to go deep into subjects, and that's what we're doing with immigration here, talking to David Beer, Director of Immigration Studies at the Cato Institute, a friend of mine. I guess I can say his name. I don't think LeBron would mind. LBJ over at WGNO says this hits, texted me and said this hits a lot closer to home than Lake and Riley. Beloved WGNO producer Mark Dean was recently killed when an illegal immigrant was speeding on the CCC and hit him on a motorcycle. It was shortly after Ed Daniels died. We all remember that. He killed Mark and hit two other cars. Suspect being held in OJC and currently awaiting trial. If found guilty, is the suspect deported or does he serve a sentence in Louisiana? Another illegal immigrant accused of molesting children at a trailer park in Kenner, and LBJ went on to say we've all reported on these stories. Along those lines, let me go to what he said about the suspect that's being held awaiting trial for killing somebody, speeding on the CCC, no insurance, no nothing, in the country illegally. So what happens to him? David Beer, Director of Immigration Studies at the Cato Institute, does he, like whoever killed Lake and Riley, not whoever killed, but the guy that's accused of killing Lake and Riley, I presume the judge is going to find him guilty. Does he stay in prison in America? Because I certainly hope you wouldn't deport him, because if you would, until the border is secured, they're coming right.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all The Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Back. Thoughts? Are you there?
I was just going to say that, look, you don't want to give somebody essentially a free pass because, you know, for committing a serious crime just because they're not from here. You know, that doesn't work either. You still need to deter crime, and you have to impose serious punishments on people, not just here's a flight back to your country after you did something terrible. So no, you gotta make him serve a sentence and impose that consequence on that person, and then deport him. And hopefully by that point the border will be more secure, and you know, a lot of them don't come back. You know, it is very costly to get to the border, and our Border Patrol still catches most of the people who try to get across. So it is unfortunately the reality is, yeah, you need to thin the job of the Border Patrol. Right now the job of the Border Patrol is taking care of asylum seekers and a bunch of other people who are coming for peaceful purposes. You know, they want to come and work or whatever, and that's fine, but we should have visas for them. They should be vetted abroad, and then the people who we deport or who we know are criminals don't get in, and Border Patrol is spending all of their time patrolling the border for those people who is, this, you know, according to them, it's less than 1% of the people they're arresting would fall into that category. So we need to focus Border Patrol's energies on those people. And that's correct for all crime enforcement, interior enforcement as well. We need to be spending our resources, our law enforcement resources, against people we know are serious offenders who've violated the rights of Americans directly. And right now, that's really not what our immigration system is doing. You look at a lot of what they're doing, they're parsing whether some guy has extraordinary ability or only exceptional ability, and then deciding whether they should wait 30 years if they have exceptional ability, or only 10 years if they have extraordinary. I mean, these are literally the questions that we're spending millions and even billions of dollars trying to decide with our immigration system, as opposed to focusing on the security and safety of Americans.
So let me get to the border and what is the truth and what's not the truth. I'm not trying to be funny about this, because it's not funny about Fred Flintstone putting out the cat, where, you know, if you put him out and if the border's not secure, they're gonna come right back in. Before we get to deporting illegals, before we get to cities that will cooperate with the feds, who won't, whether it'll be up to local police or not, what that would look like, what does a secure border look like, and how are we defining border?
Well, look, ultimately, you know, we're talking about the borders of the United States. I mean, the U.S.-Mexico border is the main transit point, but ultimately it's all the borders. And you want to secure the border. Obviously, you're never going to have 100%. You never stop 100% of crimes. I mean, it's just unrealistic. You're never going to get to
100% of anything. You just don't.
Yeah, I mean, people commit crime. People commit murders, you know, and that's the most serious offense that you're most likely to be incarcerated for a long time for, yet people still do it. And so you really have to have a metric where, you know, you have reduced the flow to a considerable extent, and you're catching the vast majority of the people who are trying to get across, which, you know, we've done better at certain times on that metric, but it certainly has never been secure in my lifetime.
So what would it look like?
It would look like Border Patrol patrolling the border, focused on a few people who are crossing the border. We have the manpower to do it.
What does that mean? Because you got God knows how many miles. I hear President Trump talk about building a wall. Yeah. Those that oppose it say that that's not practical because of the differences in terrain and so forth. Does it start with a wall? And how do you know where to prevent people from crossing? And is the border as porous as some would have you think it is?
Yeah, I mean, right now, it certainly is quite porous. I don't think it's quite as extreme as people make it out to be. I think Border Patrol does a pretty good job. But the reality is, a lot of Border Patrol agents are not in the field. They're not patrolling the border. They're spending time processing the huge numbers of people who are coming for lots of, you know, normal, peaceful reasons. And that's the kind of thing that is impeding their ability to provide better security. Look, border walls in certain places, you know, in high urban areas where there's a lot of, you know, easy getaway points, it makes sense. And they've been used there. In more rural areas, not so much. I've seen hundreds of videos showing that all of the cuts in the wall that have been made in the last 4 years. I don't think that's the primary issue. You need the manpower to catch people after they get over the wall or through the wall or under the wall or whatever the case, around the wall. So you do need the manpower there. We have the manpower. They're just being tied up doing things they shouldn't be doing. You don't need them to be the legal immigration agency of the United States. We need the consulates, the State Department to be handling people who want to come abroad in their home countries. And it's really the people who aren't going to qualify for a visa because they have done things that they shouldn't have done or are part of gangs or whatever, that should be the focus of the Border Patrol. And right now it's not. And like I said, you know, according to the Border Patrol, it's really about 1% of the people crossing the border who fall into that category. Of course, there's probably some other people who they don't know about, but really it's not the bulk of the work of the Border Patrol right now, and that's unfortunate.
So when it comes to Donald Trump's first term, how successful was he, and was it because of, because I got somebody texting me here and knows all the answers and says that President Trump fixed everything and, you know, there's an insane conversation and all that. Like, you can text whatever you want. I don't care. But just to for people that think of that way, how much progress did the president make in securing the borders? And was it because of Title 42? What role did COVID play in that? Let's be real and truthful about what happened.
Yeah, I mean, you can look up the number of apprehensions. December 2020, his last full month in office, 71,000 apprehensions that month. December 2016, before he took office, was only 43,000. So the number of attempted crossings increased significantly during his term in office. If you look at just, you know, the general average, you know, it's still higher than it was under the second term of Obama. Obviously, nothing anywhere close to what we saw under Biden. So I don't want to put that out there. But look, the border. More needed to be done to secure the border than was done under Trump. Now, I'm not going to say it was worse than Biden. That's crazy, but certainly it didn't end the problem. And if you look at the number of cases where the Border Patrol says, we think this person actually got past us, they call them gotaways, those actually increased significantly as well under Trump's term in office, too. You look at other measures, the number of released individuals who were caught by Border Patrol, almost a million people who were caught by Border Patrol under the Trump administration were released into the United States. So I'm not saying he did a terrible job on all these points, you know, but I don't think he solved the problem. I think this is an issue where people tend to look at April of 2020, when unemployment was, you know, whatever astronomical number it was at that point in the pandemic, and say, yeah, he solved the border problem. That's not how we want to solve the border problem. Yes, I agree. We could solve the border problem by destroying our economy. We do not want to destroy our economy. We want to have a safe, legal, secure process for people to come and not have this illegal immigration issue. And of course, December 2020, I mean, unemployment was still quite high at that time. The number of job openings, not very high. Compare that to what happened later when you had 12 million job openings, which was nearly twice the all-time high. There was a lot of economic incentive for people to try to get in under the Biden administration. So I'm not saying it's not, he didn't have a role to play in encouraging that or allowing that to happen, but you know, I think there are economic factors that come into play here that matter as well.
So I'm trying to get an answer here. Securing the borders would come down to more freeing up Border Patrol agents that are already on the payroll to patrol the border?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's what we need. Right now they're spending their time processing people, detaining them in their little, you know, detention facilities they have down by the border, rather than out patrolling to catch people. And, you know, that's really what we need from a Border Patrol perspective. How do we get there? I think we get there by fundamentally changing the incentives for the people who are trying to come. Most of the people who are trying to come are coming for economic opportunity. We should have a visa available to them to come work temporarily in the United States, fill some of these 8 million open jobs that we have, and increase the productivity of the U.S. economy in the process, and then they can go home and ultimately enjoy a higher standard of living in their home country, which is all what certainly what I want to see. You know, their countries improve as well as our own country.
So let me take a break. Again, I'm trying to get away from just broad statements and platitudes to solutions. You're saying take the Border Patrol agents that are currently involved with processing, put them on the border, and let them, what, turn people around as they reach the border? Don't let them into the country in the first place? What does that actually look
like? Yeah, I mean, if the flows are greatly reduced, you're going to be able to detain those people and remove them. It's really only when the flows are so high that it's unmanageable that you end up having people released and sort of the chaos that you see and people getting away because there aren't enough people to track them down. I mean, that's the main issues at the border. So, yeah, it really comes down to we need to reduce the flows. How do we reduce the flows? We need to get some of these people who are just coming for work to start applying at the embassies and not trying to sneak across the border, and have the Border Patrol focus on the smaller number of people who remain who are coming.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back talking to David Beard, taking a deep dive on immigration. Director of Immigration Studies at the Cato Institute, 504-260-1870. If you have an intelligent comment or question to make, if not, you can text in whatever foolishness you want. This is America, 943, 17 till 10. Traffic now, WWL. 9:50, 10 till 10, just a couple of minutes left with David Beard, Director of Immigration Studies at the Cato Institute. Again, David, we could talk for 25 hours about this continuously, 48 hours, 96 hours, pick a number. You know, I'm getting a lot of texts from people with very simple solutions to this very complex problem. Throw them all out, says another text. Okay. What? That's easy to say, right? Throw them all out. That's four words. Again, what does that look like? How do you go about that? The president has talked about this mass deportation. How do you go about finding where illegals are, maintaining the constitutional rights of American citizens? How do you go about this? What would that look like?
Yeah, right. I mean, excellent questions. He had 4 years in office. He campaigned with the same promise the last time. So he didn't find it as easy as I guess he expected it to be during his first term in office. And, you know, you can say, you know, come up with a million different reasons for that. And the most fundamental one is, yes, you have to actually have people go out and say, this person is here illegally, and then prove it. You can't, it's not just enough to say, I think this guy's here illegally. Or even, I know this guy, you know, the ICE agent could be 100% sure, I know this guy's here illegally, but that's not enough. You have to prove it to an immigration judge, get a removal order, get them detained and arrested, and then put them on a flight somewhere back to their home country, assuming you can identify, you know, where they're actually from.
Now, let me just jump in there for a second, if I can, yep. David. Because if you look at Lakin Riley's killer, and I'm going to call him that, he can sue me if for whatever reason he doesn't like it, he had a forged green card, did he not? So how do you even begin to parse that?
Yeah, so that the idea of, you know, you're throwing in fake identification, borrowed identification, it's very difficult to even identify exactly who this person is, biometrics. You know, fundamentally, okay, you crossed the border illegally, we collected your fingerprints, that's one way to do it. But again, you have to, you know, go out and get someone's fingerprint. I mean, this is not, look, we only solve about half of the murders in the United States. I mean, it's a terrible, horrible fact about our country. And, you know, that's a crime where there's a body on the floor, there's an evidence trail in many cases. So you think that would be easier to solve. This is going to be much more difficult, figuring out who's here illegally, who's not, and then, you know, the logistics of removing them. And the concern that I have with the rhetoric sometimes from Trump and, you know, people around him is that he's not focused on the prioritization that I would like to see. Look, we want criminals out, people part of gangs, people who shown themselves to have demonstrated themselves to not have peaceful purposes in the United States. And there unfortunately, there are a lot of them. Now,
David, we got to go, and you're going to have to come back. But let me leave with this final thought.
Sure.
A first step toward this would be employers that are employing illegals, and they know they're in the country illegally, to turn them in, right? And if that's the case, how likely are businesses that are doing that now to turn them in? Because if they thought it was so wrong, why are they employing them in the first place?
Yeah, I mean, the simple answer is most don't know who their employees are. They look at their identification and say, oh, okay, yeah, looks like good to me. And
you're picking up people outside of a big box store to do some sheetrock work, you kind of know, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, just that's not how most people get hired. I mean, some people that might be true, but that's not the norm for hiring people. And of course, if you're hiring people that way, the government has to find out how you're hiring those.
Thank you,
people,
David.
That way. Yeah.
Appreciate your time. It's a complicated problem. 9:55, more when we come back. WWL.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.